What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
It's time for the Rex Chapman Show with super sexy Mr. Josh Hopkins. You know what today is, Josh?
What is today,
Rex? Today is Stephen Curry Day. Stephen Wardell Stephen Curry II is coming on the show.
Oh, I wish he was like in a better rhythm playing right now, right? It's an awkward time for him to come on and be like, why aren't you playing better?
I know. I mean, he's only averaging like 40 over the last 10 or 11 on 55% shooting. The last person to be on a tear like that over a 10, 11, 12 game stretch was Michael Jordan 31 years ago. Guy is rolling.
He wasn't shooting that many trays.
Oh, my goodness. I'm excited. I'm excited for you to talk to little baby Stephen is what I
too.
Yes. Uh-huh. So, you know what? Let's not waste any more time. Let's get right to it.
Hold on. One thing I got to tell you, because we always do this. We're going to do we do a little bit called book club.
Oh, yeah.
Explain, something we've been reading for the week. I haven't read anything. Have you?
No, not this week. I haven't.
All right.
So
that's been book club. Okay. Let's get into your buddy. What's his name? Full name?
Wardell Stephen Curry II. Let's go.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining, taking time out of your busy schedule right now. Meet my best buddy, Josh Hopkins.
Josh, what's happening?
How you doing? Not much, man. Just so appreciative of you taking your time to join us for the next 3 hours. Just kidding. but it's really, really kind of you. And I know you and Rex have a good little history. I'd love to hear a little bit about that.
Absolutely.
Rex? We do. Obviously, I wish you were playing a little bit better so we had something more to talk about right now. We'll get into that.
I tried to prime it very, very well, so I did my best.
We want to talk about all that. But I want to give you a chance real quick. Something pretty significant just happened in America with the conviction of Derek Chauvin for the death of George Floyd. And I know you've had your thoughts on it over the past year, and I just want to give you an opportunity real quick to say what's on your mind, what's on your heart.
Absolutely. This is obviously a great day considering the alternative. There's a lot of reactions now in terms of how this last, since May of last year, so this last 11 months has been in all communities, but especially the Black community. And I think it boils down to like two points. One being this is accountability, not justice. This is justice would be if the system were constructed differently and if, the majority of police would have responded in an appropriate way that George would not be, he would be alive at this moment. But accountability for the actions that were taken. I think a lot of people have talked about it as if you're holding your breath after watching that court case and still not convinced that, these guilty verdicts would have been, brought back, that speaks volumes for how much progress, we still have to make. So this is great. This is how it should be. And we should celebrate this, but we should not let our foot off the gas pedal in terms of what we have all done and stepped up and held ourselves accountable to, our communities accountable to, law enforcement, politicians, everybody that has an opportunity to impact change. Like, this doesn't mean we succeeded. This means we're headed in the right direction, but to keep pounding the pavement. So I would not want to have seen our country if the alternative had happened. Let's just say that.
I'm with you. I very, very well put. And I just want to tell you how proud I am of you and the league and your buddies in the league, your peers, for being outspoken and saying things that needed to be said. My father, me and your father, we had our opportunities years ago and we saw things and didn't say. So I know how difficult some of this stuff is. And I really want to tell you how much it means, not of course to me, but just how much you're being vocal and being out there and being educated on these topics, what it means in society, in American society right now. So thanks.
100%. I appreciate that. I appreciate it. The interesting part is it might not have been the status quo of athletes in all sports, whatever, to speak, but there is a generational change of social media that and just the platforms that we have that our impact and our influence and the carry of our voice is way different. And so as like you said, fathers and mothers and family members who raised us to see the world a certain way did their job in that respect. And now it's on us to carry, you know, the torch of who we know ourselves to be and our communities to be. That then now how do you infuse that with the platform that you have? So it's a great time to be alive in that respect. So we're going to do our part.
Very well said.
You know, well, let's talk some hoops. I'll give a brief overview. We know each other. I can't believe you're 33 years old now. I know
that's crazy.
33 years was my rookie year. And I can still, I want to know how much you remember about your grandfather. Cause I can still remember, you know, you guys had four tickets, your family had, and I had four tickets right next to you, but I didn't know anybody. So you guys really had eight tickets there. I would look up there and I would see you sitting on your grandfather's lap, you know, at 1-2 years old. And I want to know what you remember about him and, you know, how he impacts you to this day.
Knowing just his presence, patriarch, or family, or whatnot, and what he instilled in my dad has carried down, you know, to me and my brother and my sister. But the way that you spoke about him, and he passed when I was 3 and a half, the respect of which people talk about him, and the way that, you know, our entire family reveres the name Jack is. Mm-hmm. It says enough in and of itself. There are vague memories for me of, you know, watching or him being in the backyard of my grandparents' house in Grottoes, Virginia, you know, trying to dribble a basketball on some loose pavement and ball going everywhere and him being there. Just the way that my dad talks about him. He was a presence that you can't really escape. And it's a really powerful thing. And even to the point now, like I said, he passed when I was 3. But when I had my first son, there was no doubt I wanted to pass down, you know, that name to him. And so my son's name is Ken Wardell Jack Curry. And it's a pretty, pretty special honor to be able to, you know, pass on his legacy to a new generation. So, still can go back to Grottoes and see the hoop that my dad learned how to shoot on in the backyard. My grandmother still lives in that same house. So, you know, eternally grateful for, you know, the principles that he's passed down, you know, to me through my dad.
Your dad is that way. Your dad has that presence. And I see it. We all see it. He's your dad and you might not see it that way, but it's the same. When he walks into the room, everybody knows he's there and the room is a better place.
Absolutely.
Jump in, Josh. What you got for Stefan?
Well, I mean, I'm scared to death because Rex alluded to it earlier. You're playing really well, like all time unbelievable. The talk of the internet, the world, the TV, and I feel like I'm going to be the asshole in the dugout with a guy throwing the no-no that's like, hey, your shoe's untied. And the rest of everyone's like, shut the fuck up. Get away from him. So I apologize that I'm having to do this, but I'm so excited. I just want to ask you to get into something. Two questions, both of you and Rex. And just, this isn't to be talked, but just spit it out. Like, who do you think the best passer ever in the NBA has ever been?
Magic, Jason yeah. Kidd, Stockton.
CP's yep. in there.
Chris Paul, yeah, yeah. Steve Nash. Steve yeah. Nash.
That's a good
one. I mean, Stephen's in the conversation. Let's not get that twisted.
Okay, okay. Who do you think uh-huh. the best rebounder ever in the NBA has been?
Rodman.
Yeah. Dennis, Wes Unseld, Michael Cage, guys like
okay,
that.
Okay. Well, who do you think the best ever shooter in the NBA is? It's over. There is only one answer, and everyone says the same thing. There's no, well, it's Steph. It's Steph Curry. It's, if right now there was a asteroid heading towards Earth and someone had to hit 1-3 to save the world, there would not even be a vote. It would be you. What, you know, anointed in the time that you are still playing. And yeah. and at as Steve Kerr recently said, at the peak of your powers, what does that feel like to be the best ever at something? And something that so no one has ever shot a basketball better than you to the layman. And that could be, you know, I'm excited. Someone who's never, you know, makes the best paper airplane ever, best at horseshoes, but you're the best at the thing that we really all love. You're, what is that like?
So it's crazy because one shooting, like you said, shooting the basketball is something that everybody thinks they can do. We're all not blessed to be 6'8", 6'9", whatever, with a 40-inch vert and can play above the rim. I'm obviously not. I got probably 10 dunks in my career. So, like, to know that people see the way that you play and want to go out to the park, to the rec league, to wherever, and try to emulate what you can do because it seems so approachable. And it's like, I'm strong enough to shoot there. I can, you know, get reps up. I can figure it out. That's one thing where you resonate with a lot more people, you know, that skill set in the game. Being in the moment is the weirdest, most awkward part of it because I've always talked about Reggie and Ray Allen as the ultimate tier of shooting, and not just with their records, three-point record that Ray still holds, or, you know, I passed Reggie this year, so that was an amazing accomplishment. But, you know, the longevity of doing it for, you know, 14, 16, 18 years is something that is awkward to talk about, but also inspiring because I want to get to that point. So, like, me being hopefully past Ray next year, I think that's how the numbers kind of shake out. That's something that is going to mean so much to me. Because of how much respect I have for the art of shooting the basketball, but to know that I'm trying to create a new wave of how it's done and a new level and stretch, you know, that creativity.
Today's episode is sponsored by Sick Basketball. The best shooters in the world use Sick Basketball. Sick is the first smart basketball that automatically tracks, makes, misses, release time, and more. Want to improve your shot and get buckets? Go to sickbasketball.com. We have a special offer for our listeners, 10% off with the code REX10. That's sickbasketball.com and use the code REX10. Check out sickbasketball.com.
Also, Rex, don't forget, it's sick with a Q. S-I-Q, sickbasketball.com. Am I right?
You're right. Well, Stefan, here's what I want to say. I'm a little biased, of course. I think you're I don't have an MVP vote, but you'd be my MVP this year. And yes, of course I'm biased. However, I want to go back. Show us your hand. Your hand looks different now. I know it's got that knot on it.
There it is.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah. And so what I want to ask you, when you went out, when you were hurt, your dad and I were texting like we normally do. You were playing so well. You're playing such great basketball. And I thought, oh my God, he's toying with the game. And I want to know when you hurt your hand, because it's different now. It looks different. How concerned were you that might you know, be something that hampers you going forward?
I mean, I know you played a long time in the league. Anytime you get injured, there is a little bit of doubt of, you know, whether it's significant or not. It's like, you know, I want to get back to full strength, and however long that takes, you know, got to be prepared for it. And I had two surgeries on the hand, and I had some numbness that came with the actual injury that was kind of tough to – sorry, there's a siren going on in D.C.
Oh, good.
There's a
surprise.
Yeah, there was a huge trust and faith factor that I could get back to 100%. It took almost 7 months for full feeling to come back. But I knew if that happened and the time that I had to work on my body and, you know, make sure every other piece of the puzzle was in the right shape, that, you know, I could come back, you know, stronger and better, more efficient than I left the game. And I didn't know about the pandemic coming. So I spent 4 months leading into playing a glorious one game return before the shutdown happened. And then I had another basically 7-8 months before, you know, the next season started, because we didn't get to go to the bubble. So to your point, yeah, it was a little bit of a doubt of, if I can't feel my two fingers on my left hand, like, that's going to be a problem. But once I got through that hurdle, it was like, all right, I have to really take advantage of this window of time to, you know, get my body in shape, you know, get stronger, get more efficient with every movement, work on my skill set that I could come back with fresh legs and not be your normal 33-year-old coming back, you know, on the court. And so I took advantage of it, and hopefully that'll give me some more runway, you know, in this prime that I'm in.
Well, the tear you're on, averaging right at 55% shooting. I know I was speaking with Ray Ritter, your guy Ray. Yeah. All thanks for him to getting this set up. You 40 on 55% shooting. The last person to do that over a 10-11 game stretch was MJ 31 years ago. And your dad and I got to see that up close and personal. And when I say that, it was great playing against Michael. However, at the end of every game, you could walk away if you wanted to, going, he's just physically more dominant than we are. He's bigger. His hands are bigger. You're doing this at your size, and you're playing through and around teams. And yeah, from the perimeter over teams, but not over at the rim. How are you doing this?
I mean, a lot of it is probably, hand-eye coordination, footwork and all that. And you know, as a shooter, you're blessed with a certain level of just natural skill, but then you add to that with the work and the reps and, you know, the pursuit of like perfection in that respect. But a big part of it too is the conditioning aspect of the game that, I was watching some old school Pistons, Denver Nuggets. It was like the highest scoring game in NBA history, I think like early 90s, and just watching the pace of the game. And I'm analyzing, I'm like, I cover so much more ground, you know, in an average game than what I just watched in that NBA Hardwood Classics. And a lot of that is to my advantage because, you know, like you said, there are a lot stronger, faster, more athletic guys out there, especially defenders that can try to make your life miserable out there. But I try to counter that with never staying in the same spot, you know, for more than a second, covering as much ground as possible and trying to, you know, never get tired. And over the course of my 30, 40, 5 minutes, wherever I play a game, you're going to tire other guys out and you're going to find more space on top of just being able to use your ball handling and, you know, court awareness and IQ and all that type of stuff. So, but the biggest piece for anybody, any young kid that's playing the game, is be comfortable with who you are as a basketball player too. I had some temptations of like, I wish I could just dunk. I wish I could just drive down the lane. And you always get fascinated by what you can't do.
You can. You've got that sneaky athleticism. I know that.
I have a little taste of it. But the bigger point is like, yeah, you always kind of just – like I see LeBron, you're like, I wish I could do some of the stuff he can do physically. and you kind of can get wrapped or wrapped up in and distracted by that. But at the end of the day, like, I am my own type of basketball player and got to do what I can to be successful. So that's, I guess that's the message.
Hey, to that end about you, for me, for my entire life, the basketball's already always gone to the next level with like this physical difference, like from Dr. J, and then came like Bird and Magic, who were big guys. The skill always continued to go up, always, but they were big guys with that kind of skill. And mm-hmm. then, you know, you had Jordan, which was just like no one had ever seen anything athletically like him. And then Shaquille came into the league and no one knew. It was like, this is a different thing. And you got LeBron coming in, who's like Karl Malone, but like Jordan, you know, this physical presence all the time, skill getting better. But to me, you were the first time that the evolution of the game branched out towards skill, simply skill, not like, oh, he's the fastest, bestest, and most skilled. And where do you, because of that, now you see people say you've revolutionized the game. You've heard that a million times, and you have. It's a different game, and now other people are following suit and shooting these long three-pointers. Where do you see the game going? Like, I know this sounds like an old man, but do you think there will be a four-point play someday? Also, the evolution of the player next. Is the next evolution going to be someone that can – try and have your hand eye and work ethic and shoot, but it's also, you know, Vince Carter, like what's next for the game and for the players?
Or can they just shoot it left-handed? I mean, maybe that's it. Just pull left from 35 whenever you want. What is it?
It's a good question. Like, if you ask somebody 30 years ago, when somebody made like 400 threes in a season, they would say, hell no. Like, it's not even. I mean, do they shoot 400 threes? You say, make. Right. Which one is
right. Yeah. And you're allowed to shoot 400
threes? What is a three-pointer? I feel like the game kind of will – my prediction would be there's going to be somebody that has literally everything to, like, the – greatest level, because they've seen everything. They're going to be blessed with athleticism and height and strength and all the physical attributes you need, but then they're going to have seen the style of play that they're going to work on from, you know, 6, 7, 8 years old, whenever I started playing for real, and develop those skills, where they're going to have like the top five in every category, be able to top five dribbler, top five passer, top five shooter, top five defender, like every piece of it. There's going to be somebody like that. But I will also say the game is probably going to not reset itself, like revert to a more traditional style with there's going to be some bigs as well, some just physically dominant guys that are going to force the game to kind of revert a little
bit. Right. If Shaq played today, it'd be hard to play small ball that game.
100%. Right. You see, like, a little bit with like Joel and Jokic right now, they can shoot threes. They don't really want to. It's part of their game. It's not a feature, but they're still physically dominant. They can, you know, post up. Jokic is a much better passer, but Joel is just a physical presence that if you play small ball against him, you're going to most likely get dominated. Unless you have a Draymond Green and a Kevon Looney on your team.
You're a politician too.
That's right. That's right.
I think it's going to be a combination of both, where you're going to see some generational talent come that is going to be blessed physically, going to have every skill set because they've seen it and they're going to work on it and buy into it. But then I do feel like, you know, the bigs aren't dead in this league either. So it's going to be a nice, healthy balance. 4-point play. I don't see it at all. I don't think it works geometrically with the court. They're going to have to widen the court and do all sorts of nonsense. And I don't see that playing part in the future of the game at all. But who knows?
Hey, I don't think I've ever asked you this. You weren't highly recruited, weren't highly sought after coming out of high school. Do you remember the guys that made the McDonald's game? Your year?
You know what's so crazy? I was so far removed from it. Like, I don't even remember, like, looking at the list because it wasn't even on my radar.
Right.
Like, that's amazing. I was like a friend guy. I was like, I didn't make it. Who made it? I'd love to know.
Yeah, I know. We should come across that. But beyond that, at what point, Stefan, did you, and I know you were hungry and, you know, you were trying to prove yourself at Davidson constantly. At what point did you feel confident and comfortable that you might be able to make some money playing the game of basketball?
There's always the dream from the time I was probably 8 or 9, where you're like, I know what NBA basketball is and I want to get there. But the honest answer is literally after my sophomore year in college, we had just played in the Elite Eight game against Kansas. We lost on a last second, or we missed a last second shot in Ford Field up in Detroit. We're a mid-major, almost one shot away from making it to the Final Four. We have some. I'm a sophomore. We have seniors that, you know, led the team the entire year. There's their last game. There's so many emotions. We're in the locker room crying. An interview started after the game. The first question one of the interview guys asked me was like, yo, are you declaring for the draft? I'm like, what are you talking about? What? No, like, I'm not even being funny. It wasn't even on my radar. And after he asked that question, I started thinking like, oh, wait, maybe I guess I could. Like, that'd be crazy. And then I started to actually analyze the situation. I started looking at draft boards at that point. Started to realize what I might need to add to my game to be an actual legit professional, which is why I stayed an extra year to transition to a point guard role and be more of a playmaker and a scorer, which is how I felt I'd be, you know, best suited to make it to the next level. But yeah, that was the first time I actually even thought about it as a legit possibility. But thankfully, I made the right decision to come back an extra year to get stronger, work on, you know, seeing the game from a point guard position, because I was only 6'3". It wasn't a situation where I was going to come in as a shooting guard. So things worked out in that respect.
You mentioned that run, that Davidson run. That was an all-timer. And it was so much for everyone to see because no one had heard really of Davidson for that much. And for you, not really at all. I know real basketball people knew and could, because you were a scoring elite guy, but the nation, after that run had ended and you walked, you know, back onto campus or out, how was your life different from that? Was that the moment you were like, everything's changed?
100%. Like you said, our school was 1900 students. So the world in that respect didn't get any bigger, but the spotlight of, you know, even doing, was it 5 good minutes on PTI? I did a Jim Rome interview on TI. All those like type of interview requests started rolling in. It was like, I went on a late night show with, I forget his name now, tripping.
Roy Firestone or somebody.
What's the tall redhead guy? Conan.
Conan.
I've been
on there twice.
Yeah, I went to New York and did that as a sophomore in college, and that's when the world kind of flipped upside down. But granted, to your, I was Del Curry's son for a while in Charlotte, and it was like I knew what it was like to be known around a city, but it wasn't on my own like merits. It was just, you know, the Curry name, which was a little different in that respect. But the funniest part was when I got back from that game. I had my little laptop in my dorm room, and this is Facebook's early days, you know, me being on there. My computer crashed because I had over 1,000 messages in my inbox. And I tried to log in after I got back from the game. My whole computer crashed. All my work was on there. It was a total disaster. So that's when it got messed up, because it was interrupting my academic future. I was like, I need a freaking computer. But yeah,
play it's too weird. Well. Being,
yeah. The one part of it is cool, because it's such a small, tight-knit community in a campus that I could always revert back to that. It wasn't like, you know, you're meeting new people every single day in a big, you know, Division I school with 30, 40,000, you know, students. So there was some comfort in that I wasn't get too big-headed in the moment, and things could kind of stay normal to a certain
extent. My nephew, Ross, wrote this question. I asked him, he's a big fan of yours. And he said, I want to know if it's true. He read that after that run, like the next day you went back, there was some sort of orientation or something, and you actually went out and helped all the kids bring their stuff
the
in.
OT like, team. Like the orientation team. Yeah, me and my guy, Steve Rossiter, were my teammates, and my college roommate, Brian Barr, we signed up. We got our little fresh T-shirts. Says OT on it, orientation team. We're moving in the freshmen into their dorms and the whole deal, giving the parents some directions around campus and stuff. You know, had to keep it. I wanted the normal college experience. I didn't want to be somewhere where it's just about basketball. So that was fun.
Well, that's why God gave you that, because if I had just come off that run, I'd be like, go help kids bring their shit in. Have you seen my hand? I could hurt this. You were raised right. My parents, they're terrible.
Oh, so good. You know, Stephen, the evolution of the game has been, it's just been phenomenal. And watching you kind of take it to another level has been crazy. I say often, I was built for this league, and bad shots are good shots now, you know, running shots on the move, all those shots are good shots. The one thing that I just find phenomenal is your ability to shoot the jump shot from 3-point range off of the dribble.
Mm-hmm.
When did you start even, 'cause look, a lot of those shots, when you were in college, high school, they would have been considered bad shots. Yeah. Were you taking them then? Could you do that then? When did that evolve?
When you talk to my dad, when I was in high school, they used to get on me and get real mad because I didn't shoot enough in high school. Then I got to college, and I was basically playing off the ball for my first 2 years. We had an amazing point guard, Jason Richards, who would set me up. He was just such an amazing court. He could manage the court. He had a great feel and knew where I was. It didn't evolve until my junior year when I became a point guard, and you're initiating the offense, but you still got to look for your own shot, but also get other people involved too. But you're basically doing everything off the bounce. And that's when that kind of opened up that skill set to another level. But then not until like my fourth year in the league did I start to really develop the range that I've capitalized on now. And that happened naturally. It's just kind of like when you get to the league, you know, you only need this much space, but where that space is kind of changes, or a change for me based on how teams regarded me. And my confidence just kind of grew from that. And I worked on it, and I had the audacity and a coach that let me. I had the audacity to put it into action in an actual game. And I'm pretty sure if I started shooting like 25% or something like that, I would have got that revoked pretty quick. But thankfully, I took advantage of it.
Well, you talk about that audacity, and you know, that is that, you know, coach can only give you a blueprint. Talk to me for a minute. And I've known your coach and your friend, Steve Kerr, for 35 years. Talk to me about your relationship with him, because he lets you play. There's a fine line I think he has to toe between, you know, me and your dad will watch the game and you'll have just three ridiculous turnovers, and we'll look at one another and we'll look at Steve and we'll be like, oh, I know Steve just wants to kill him right now. But he knows that he's walking a fine line there, because he's got to give – great players need the freedom and the liberty to make mistakes. Talk to me about your relationship with him as a player, and then away for a little bit as a person?
Well, I have to start with the person because that's how our that trust and that communication started. You know, as one of the lead guys on the team, when you have a new coach come in, you know, it's kind of awkward at first because we had a certain level of success and he's coming in trying to, like you said, give us the blueprint of how to get over the hump and become a championship contending team. And, you know, this is how he wants to make a couple changes and all that. He came in with such humility of, he's like, I know you guys are a great team. I know you've had some playoff success. He's like, I'm just trying to tweak a few things that I feel like based on his experience and what he saw were our best attributes that could unlock, you know, us getting to the next level. And sometimes you have coaches that kind of want to be the hero and say, you know, I did this. I brought in, you know, these specific changes and this is what's going to get us there. He's like, it's just a different, you know, the entrance, if you will, of like how he wanted to, you know, take our success and our foundation as a great defensive team, a really talented offensive team, and unlock it. And that for me kind of disarmed me a little bit to be like, okay, I can roll with this. Cause you know how much I love Mark Jackson at the time too. It was a big change for me. So it started there. And then you see how he handles people, how he manages people, how he talks to people, how he, finds ways to make sure everybody knows their role and get them to buy into it for the betterment of the entire team. And that meant a lot. And then on the court, a lot of that's just kind of the trial by fire. We put in our motion kind of system and he knew that was going to allow us to have, you know, everybody involved, create, you know, good shots, feature me and Clay, you know, as a great backcourt. And there's that one video or one highlight of, I think I hit a shot against the Clippers and I did like 7 dribbles between my legs, came back to the top of the key. Clay was open on the right wing, but I was in such rhythm, I just turned around and shot it. And you see him over on the court. What is it? And then I make it and he puts his hands on his head. He turns around, he just walks back. I think that's when I broke the system on. What is a good play or good bad shot conversation? But there is definitely a give and take on. I just need to be creative, be myself, have the confidence in the flair that I play with Clay, Draymond, and all the same, and just be mindful of what we're trying to accomplish and how we're trying to go about things. And obviously the success has been proven. So it's been a really good ride with him.
Got a dog in the back. Sorry.
I love it.
German Shepherd.
So you've talked earlier in this conversation about, you know, staying hungry and working and keeping up your craft and constantly getting better. And your athleticism seems to be, to the naked eye, maybe, you know, as good as ever. You seem to flow so well, but at some point those two lines intersect and then they begin to diverge. How close are you there, do you feel? I know it's tough to even contemplate as an athlete, and because you know that eventually happens, do you enjoy these type of runs that you're on now, these hot streaks, more or appreciate them more than maybe you did a few years ago?
Great questions. I feel like it's almost an impossible question to answer, because if you asked me, you know, 5-6 years ago, how would I feel as a 33-year-old running around with a brand new team? Like, I would have said, I'm still in my prime. I'm probably right in the middle of it or whatever. And then I'm thinking now, you look at, you know, how certain guys or certain veterans have sustained that level, you know, at this stage in their career, there's nothing predictable about it. And that is, that's okay for me to kind of just be in the moment and really just, to your second question, enjoy what I'm doing right now and really enjoy the work that goes into it. Cause that's what people don't see. As you get older, the awareness of what it takes and the investment of time and intentions on, you know, during the season, but mostly in the off season of how you can sustain this level is where the real secret for success is. And, you know, like I kind of talked about earlier, this last 9 months before the season started was huge for me to kind of reset and rejuvenate myself mentally and physically. And obviously I'm reaping the benefits of that right now. And then you talk about, like, anytime you're like, there's some, the career marks of guys, you know, 33 and over who haven't done what I'm doing right now. Like, it's wild. It's not something I was, you know, trying to do. It's just, you know, I have such a confidence in my game that, you're trying to starting to, you know, pave a new expectation of what it means to, you know, thrive at this age and whatnot. So I'm trying to hold on to that. And I talked to like Jason Kidd, who talked about mentally how you it's the mental aspect of how you sustain yourself at this level is more important than anything, really. Obviously you need to be healthy. You need to, you know, be able to wake up and feel good physically, but the mental aspect of staying in the fight, staying competitive, no matter if you're chasing championships or realistically, we're just fighting for playoff position right now, like staying locked in there is where, you really set yourself up for that longevity and the ability to stretch as much of your prime as possible. Once you let go of the mental commitment to what you do is when the wheels fall off. And that was a huge point for me to remember, you know, as I go through this.
No, yeah, Stephen, so much we want to hear about from you and ask you, but I know there's plenty of stuff you're passionate about. One is your foundation, Eat, Learn, Play. And you guys have fed some 16 million meals since the pandemic started. Talk a little bit about that, please.
It's a special foundation. Like you said, where me and my wife, we've tried to find our collective philanthropic, you know, mission and vision. We've done so many things in the community over the years, but we never did anything together where we could combine our mutual resources and connections and interests in terms of how we want to impact the next generation. And Eat, Learn, Play was, you know, what came of that. And we launched it back in June of 2019. And, you know, fast forward from there, 8 months later, the pandemic started. And our three pillars of focus, you know, Eat, Learn, Play, the Eat pillar was one that was a dire need. It has been, and food insecurity is a huge issue in our country, especially in our backyard of Oakland and in the Bay Area. Pre-pandemic, 1 in 4 kids go to school hungry. That's a statistic across the country. And so we were trying to find efforts to address that need. And the pandemic kicked in and you realize how many kids rely on their public school systems for, you know, for meals, for breakfast and lunch. And when the pandemic happened, school shut down, that need grew exponentially. And so you mentioned that number of meals distributed over the last, you know, 14 months now, closing in on 17 million meals. It was very fortuitous that we launched when we did, not knowing the pandemic was coming, but we were able to act really quickly. And thankfully, because of amazing partners that we get to work with, the Alameda County Community Food Bank in Oakland, World Central Kitchen, who's a national program, with Chef Jose Andres, who they show up and put programming structures into to get meals distributed to the right places, reopen restaurants, and get some of the workforce back into business, and then help address some of the food supply issues that were arising on a daily because of the pandemic. And so they've been a huge partner as well. So we're doing meaningful work. And anytime you're doing anything in the philanthropic space, it's an amazing success, but it's also the success is only because there is a growing need. And so it's a hard thing to celebrate because we're trying to really impact people's lives. And we want to be the village for the next generation of kids and families that wouldn't have it otherwise. And so any way people get involved, eLearnPlayFoundation.org is our home. And we're continuing to build out our scale of work across those three pillars. And it's been awesome.
Fantastic. Hey, I saw a story, wanted to see how it came about. You invited an officer and his son to the ball game in Philly the other night. How did that come about?
That was a cool one. So that's the power of social media. Like we were talking about earlier, I came across a video of an officer named Joshua who lives in Delaware, and he was at this park, and he had there's another kid named Rakir who was there, and they had a relationship and a love for basketball. Joshua was out on the court and was showing off his moves in his full police uniform, and Rakir was filming him, but he was commentating on the video. So Kyle goes up, knocks down a shot, and the kid goes, "Oh, that's Curry, that's Curry, oh, that's Curry." So he's like hyping him up, talking about he's got a range, he can shoot and all that. And so Joshua appreciated that love. So fast forward a bit later, he comes back and he's talking to Rakir. He's thanking him for, you know, hyping him up and showing him love, and he wanted to return the favor. And so he bought him a pair of Curry brand shoes and you know, made the kid make sure he felt loved and seen and appreciated. And we need more of that positivity, obviously, in the world in general. And so it was a cool opportunity when I played in Philadelphia to invite them to the game and show them that love back. And so I gave Rakir the jersey from the other night and some game worn shoes for Joshua and some Curry wearing gear. But really, it's mostly just encouragement, because what I stand for and all that and inspiration, impact, can only go so far if other people don't find ways to implement that into their own lives, into their own communities, and in their own way. And Josh was inspiring to me just because, you know, it's not like he's on some grand stage. He's just doing it to be, you know, to be himself, and knows how important it is. And that meant a lot to me.
What do you got, Josh?
I have a list here of All-Americans. The McDonald's All-American from 2006. Okay.
All right, let's go. All right.
Seth Curry. No. You got Mike Conley, Earl Clark, Javaris Crittenden, Wayne Ellington, Gerald Henderson, Ty Lawson, Greg Oden, Brendan Wright, Thaddeus Young, Lance Thomas, Vernon Macklin, and Scotty Reynolds.
Wow. So the funny is, I remember all of them. I've seen them at camps and stuff like that, but it is crazy to know. Was that probably four guys still in the league?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. That's still pretty good. I mean,
yeah, from 2006,
that's 15 years later, man. Right? But
yeah, that's pretty good. And then you think about our draft class in 2009, so 3 years later from that McDonald's All-American list, how many point guards were in that draft? You got Drew Holiday, Tyreke Evans, Ty Lawson, Brandon Jennings, Jeff Teague, Eric Maynor, Ricky Rubio.
Wow, I forgot about that. Johnny Flynn, too.
So it's just wild how hard this game is, you know, obviously in this level. So, but that All-American list is crazy. Thaddeus Young is a special. I played against him a couple weeks ago.
Right. Hey, what's it like? We're going to have Seth on as soon as possible. But what's it like playing against Seth? And then also you've got your brother-in-law, Damian Lee, on your own team. Married to your younger sister, Sadell. What's that like, just having that family bond there almost everywhere you go?
It's crazy. It's surreal still to this day. I think yesterday was the 10th game we've played against each other. For some, it should be a lot more, but for some reason, we always want to get hurt before that matchup. So either one of us misses it. But even, you know, talking about that list, like there's only 450 jobs in, at this level. And to know that we've all taken our different paths to get here. And, you know, Seth going to Liberty for a year, playing amazing, getting, you know, transferring to Duke, going the G League route to 10 days to, you know, get a training camp roster invite to now being, you know, signing a 4-year, you know, nice deal. You know, Damian Lee, kind of the same, taking a different route to get to this level. And now we're playing, we're teammates. Like it's nuts. And so I appreciate every opportunity that we get to play against each other and compete. It brings out the love of the game to a whole nother level. Cause you say, you know me for 33 years, there's times we're in the backyard, we're acting like we're NBA players and like shooting fake game winners or wearing our pops jerseys and stuff. And it's like, now we got our own thing. So it's special for sure.
How many legit fights in the backyard?
Oh, at least 15.
Yeah.
Seth, right? So you ask Seth. Seth had this thing where we would play one-on-one. And obviously, I'm big brother. I'm supposed to win. He'd get me every once in a while. But he had this thing where he caught a foul. And I'm like, no, that's not a foul. Like, it literally didn't touch you. And I wouldn't give him the foul. He'd literally take the ball and just walk off the court. But he knew all I wanted to do was play. He knew I wasn't going to just let him walk off. So he played that card every single time. He's like, nah, I'm done. I'm done. He walked off with the ball in his hand. I'm like, nah, you really going?
He would keep the ball.
Keep the ball and walk off.
And, it's a hell of a move, though.
It's a trump card every single time. But I just wanted to hoop. I just wanted to hoop. And he knew I wanted to hoop. And he wanted to hoop. So the game within the game still exists even to last night. So I love it. I love it.
You got anything else, Josh? I know I want to go all night, but
yeah,
all day, all night.
What's your favorite movie?
One serious, one funny. Right. Wedding Crashers is the funny one, and The Count of Monte Cristo is my favorite series.
Really?
Whoa!
Well, that's I haven't heard
nicely
that.
Nicely done.
What about that? Do you really enjoy? What about that movie?
Overcoming dire odds and just that level of perseverance. There's just it gets me every single time.
Little on the nose, but yeah, okay.
You know what I'm saying?
I see it. I see where you absolutely came to like that, because 6'3", nobody wanted you, and here you are.
It's beautiful. Glad to see you.
What about your favorite? Who's your favorite actor?
Ooh, that's a good one. Jamie,
you got actor friends. Remember, be careful.
Mm. No, I got Jamie Foxx. He's up there.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
All right, front row center to any concert, any performer, anyone you want to see, dead or alive. Who is it?
Dead or Prince.
Yes. Yeah. Let's go. Let's go.
Well done,
Stephen Curry.
Well done. All
second.
Right. And last thing, I'll let Rex take you out. But we did ask your dad this too. And like I said earlier, if one shot to save the world, one 3-pointer, and it can't be anyone named Curry, who do you got to save the world?
Klay Thompson.
Now and
woo!
And
Klay. That was fast. Boom. That was fast. He didn't need anything else.
Well done.
Anything else. Okay.
Well, buddy, Wardell Stephen Curry II, thank you so much. I love you, buddy. Come back sometime. Do it again. Stay on this roll and continued health. Real quick, are you the MVP this year?
I mean, I got to be. I got to be.
Okay. All right.
I probably won't get it, but I mean, whatever.
No, don't say that. Uh-uh. Mm-hmm.
Keep going like this, and that nobody will be able to.
I'm just setting.
Keep this going.
I like to be dramatic sometimes, so I'm just setting the table.
I know you do. I know you do. All right, love you, buddy. Thank you.
Love y'all too. Hey, thank you. Continue help. Appreciate the time. Absolutely.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
All right.
Okay, Josh, that was Wardell Stephen Curry II. What do you think, bud?
He sure didn't disappoint. He sure didn't disappoint. How it's amazing to me that people that we've been talking to that are this successful are this nice. What a great guy, right?
Agreed. Just a super person. But it makes you realize why they're so successful. You know,
I need to be nicer.
They're so much more on the ball than we are.
Because they're nicer and better people.
Right.
Right.
Maybe better that's a lesson. Beings. That's right.
Be better.
Well, look, I mean, the dude's been on an unbelievable tear of 10, 12 games, averaging 40, shooting 55%. The last guy to do it, as we said, was Michael Jordan 31 years ago. But he was physically dominant. Stephen's not. He's demoralizing players right now, demoralizing teams, demoralizing coaches.
Well put.
He has it on automatic.
It looks silly out there, the best of the best. And he's just, I don't know, having his way with them and not. And it's just fun to watch. I don't know.
Listeners enjoyed that out there, if they enjoyed that, go back, listen to our debut episode with his father, Del Curry. Get some more Steph stories, some Seth stories. He has good stories about both of them. What a family. Really fortunate and happy that Stephen dropped by. I want to thank everybody for coming along. Listening to the Rex Chapman Show with Super Sexy Josh Hopkins, powered by basketballnews.com. Subscribe, rate, and review. We'll see you next time.